Time now for your comments. My conversation with T.R. Reid regarding the Nobel Peace Prize nomination for the game of soccer brought this response from Matthew Muspratt of Washington, D.C. He writes, "Given Mr. Reid's international journalism and worldly experience, I was surprised to hear him go along with Mr. Edwards in portraying soccer singularly as a sport with rowdy crowds. It is true that there have been horrific incidents at some stadiums, but soccer is a venue for bringing different cultures together. In my experience, soccer is about sitting in a sea of Guatemalan and American flags at a World Cup qualifier. It's about shooting the breeze with a Jamaican man who had traveled to the U.S. to see his country play, and about high-fiving and chanting with both soccer moms and recent Salvadoran immigrants at D.C. United games, where the announcements are in Spanish and English. I am sorry and disappointed that your segment continued the perception, typical of Americans, that soccer is just about fans getting killed." A phone call from Bob Schwartz of Atlanta.
"I'm calling to correct Frank DeFord. He said that the great Colts-Giants overtime game was in 1959, but really it was in 1958. The same two teams met 1 year later in the 1959 NFL championship game, and the Colts won that one as well."
Brad Mumbrew of Washington, D.C. writes about a segment that related the account of the Texas Seven to the scripting of a Hollywood movie. He says, "Rene Montaigne's interview with John Ridley about the Texas prison escapees left me shaking my head. This interview only further distanced listeners from the story in an era where the lines between entertainment and news are continually blurred. It put a veneer of fiction over a very real, very tragic, and very dangerous situation. Considering the creative process of writers and artists may be valid on its own, but not when it's layered onto actual events of this magnitude. Let's leave the creative process for developing movies of the week and crime novels separate from the reporting of events that should engage us as listeners and citizens." Susan Stamberg's interview with historian Robert Dalek about Lyndon Johnson's transition to the presidency brought this letter from Gary Cooper of Dallas. "I was extremely amused to hear that it may have been hard for the public to accept LBJ after Kennedy because Johnson was a heavily accented Texan. Lyndon B. Johnson spoke in the same style as most Texans of his generation, which here in Texas is not regarded as a foreign accent. John Kennedy, in contrast, had perhaps the strongest regional accent of any modern president. Those of us who do not hail from the Northeast almost need an interpreter to listen to his speeches." And finally, on hearing the report that not all Californians believe rolling blackouts are a sign they need to conserve energy, Allison and Bob Greaves of Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, found the daily advice in their Old Farmer's Almanac calendar especially relevant. No snowflake in an avalanche ever feels responsible. Send your comments to Morning Edition Letters, National Public Radio, 635 Massachusetts Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20001. Or call the listener comment line at 202-842-5044. The email address is morning@npr.org.